Blog Talk Radio.
From deepest, darkest Africa, across the polar ice cap, spanning the jungles of South America, without a compass, without a map, Blog Talk Radio and Wildlife Educational Services presents Larry Batson's Wild World. Discover the wonders of the natural world with nationally known wildlife educator Larry Batson as we visit his wild world.
Well, hello everyone from the remote jungles of Clinton Falls, Indiana. This is Larry Batson. You are listening to Wild World on this magical network we call Blog Talk Radio as we reach around the world. Hello to our listeners in Ireland, England, New Zealand, and even the small community, which I know one of our guests tonight is familiar with, Selma, Indiana. We have listeners there. Welcome and all across North America. As always, from the Wild World News Studios in Indianapolis, Indiana, newly renovated, now HD, the Honorable Distinguished Dr. Henry Day. Good evening, Doctor.
Good evening, Mr. Batson. Did you receive your bounty of pears and plums tonight?
We did. We appreciate that. My pears wife, Cheryl, pears. Yeah, she's a barber, so she decided Dr. Day should be looking good tonight for tonight's broadcast.
That's right. So she coiffed my hair tonight.
Yeah, she did coiff your hair, and your pear tree is quite bountiful, and our bears absolutely love it. So
great.
We appreciate that very much as we've been dealing with warmer weather here in central Indiana. It's a battle to keep these animals cooled down. You know, Dr. Day, I have this one tiger, male tiger, that likes it when you hose down his manhood.
Naughty bit.
Don't we all?
Amen.
It looks painful to me.
Well, it's a little water pressure, but in moderation.
What tiger is it? Is it Hank?
No, it's Luke. Yeah,
Luke.
And Luke. He's, let's put it this way: he's not all there. He's a couple hammers short of a bucket or whatever you want to call it. I mean, he's not, for a tiger, he's just not too bright.
Well, we've all been there.
How do you tell? Does he make spelling errors, or how do you tell the intelligence of a tiger?
Well, you just have to, when you have six of them, you get to know them pretty good, and you can just say, that guy is not too swift, you know?
I guess.
That's the voice of Bruce Munson. It's kind of similar to some of your cohorts. Maybe you worked with Bruce over the years in your broadcasting career.
There's quite a few, and I've been fortunate to work with some good ones, a couple of whom you have on tonight.
I know.
Amen.
What do you mean? I thought there's only me and Shirk in here. Who's the famous one?
What a night.
Moto,
we've
how
got
are you?
We're great.
I'm good, Bruce. Thank you. This is rather interesting. It opens a whole new world to me, what you're doing here, Larry and Doctor. And these are the things we used to dream about 10, 15 years ago, and all of a sudden here it is. I think it's great.
Well, thank you. That's the voice of Chris Connor, and I have to say that I harass Chris constantly when he did his nighttime show with my request of either Cream or Jimi Hendrix records.
You that guy.
I was
all?
The one. And one of the favorite voices on The Wrath of the Buzzard, WNAP. And also with us tonight, we'll be having quite a conversation with probably the most unusual way to promote a radio station. He simply became the world's greatest escape artist, Bill Shirk.
Well, it's a pleasure to be here, and I know Bruce and I work together in Muncie, Indiana at WERK, and we're coming up here in February of next year at 50th year anniversary.
Wow. And that's going to be a hoot.
That's
going to
be a hoot.
Fun. Yeah.
Can I get a backstage pass for that?
You can.
You can get a front stage pass.
Well, I think I want to come, too.
Yeah, we'll be there. You know,
Bill is just one of those kind of guys in the business. You just have to admire his staying power, his ability to do and turn a good business. I've always been fascinated by Bill Shirk, and I worked with him, of course, when we put on Hoosier 93 and '96, and Bill, I just, you know, you've held on, and then you became big time, and man, I can't congratulate you enough. You know how to run a business, and you're to be lauded about that, hanging out in this market all these years.
Well, I appreciate that, but I had an awful lot of really great people, including you and Bruce in my career, that worked for me, and it was just, you know, it takes a team to make things happen.
Did you forget someone?
Oh, and Larry Batson, too. Yeah.
Now,
all those crazy stunts I did, Larry supplied all the animals and made me always sign a release.
And was it Larry that – Larry, did you supply the rattlesnakes that Bill was buried with?
Oh, yeah. Yes.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
See, that's one thing about Bill. One reason I think Bill has done so well in the business, Bill, you're fearless, you know, and fearlessness will take you a long way.
Either fearless or one stupid word. Or crazy, I think. I think crazy is the word.
Yeah, fearless is one word you could use.
Well, and of course, Bill is my mentor, because every Sunday at RadioMom.fm, you can listen to the 80s on Sunday with Larry the Animal Guy, bringing those great hits that we love so well. So
now that signal does that signal stream so that it's available on the internet?
Yeah, yes. It's on the internet. Just Radio Mom put it in. We're on both the streaming services, you know, TuneIn.com and all that stuff.
Okay.
But basically, the signal just covers the Boone County area of Zionsville and Lebanon. But it's, believe it or not, it's very similar to the format of ERK and Hoosier 96 and all the other stations, just different segments of music.
When I was up that way, it's been a while, but I enjoyed hearing it the day I was up there, so I'm glad to know it's available on the Internet.
Right.
Was it on Sunday?
Well, no, I'm afraid it wasn't. It was a weekday. I couldn't tell you which day at the moment, but I know it was a weekday. Anyway.
This part of Wild World, this is going to be a great show. It's brought to you by Wildlife Educational Services. And our website, LarryTheAnimalGuide.com, tells all about our wildlife rescue work that we do, our wildlife education programs, and our fabulous Facebook page, Larry the Animal Guy and Friends, tells all about our latest activity. We have lots of wonderful animal videos and pictures. It's all there for you, and they make it possible for Wild World to be on Blog Talk Radio.
It's now time, from his broadcasting mecca in Indianapolis, Indiana, the distinguished Dr. Henry Day with the Wild World News.
Good evening. This is Dr. Henry Day with the Wild World News for August 28th. This month has just cruised by.
Whew, fast.
As we're getting older, they just seem to go a little faster.
Yeah, I remember people tell us that crap, and we never believed them.
And we never believed it, but here we are.
Here we be, yeah.
Yep. Well, let's start out the Wild World News tonight with an interesting story from Anchorage, Alaska. Listen to this. Andrew Harrelson found a 12-foot fossilized mammoth tusk in a bend of the Fish River near his village of White Mountain, which is about 63 miles east of Nome there. Now, the strange part about this is his mother found a mammoth tusk 22 years earlier in the same area.
Wow. That's
what
worth
the
a
odds
lot
of that.
Money.
How much does a tooth fairy pay for those?
Well, the clear implication of the story is that back in time there must have been some sort of a mammoth dentist operating in that area, right?
Obviously.
Has anybody calculated just how many piano keys a 12-foot mammoth tusk would make?
Wow, yeah.
I think it'd make a couple baby grands.
Enough for the Mormon Tabernacle Choir. All right, we've got loggerhead turtles hatching in Pensacola Beach, Florida.
Oh,
and,
cool. We love them. We love them,
right.
Baby turtles.
We do love them little baby turtles. And people are seeing them erupting from the sand and scurrying off to the Gulf.
Wow.
I'm
going to
put
cool.
some butter. I'm going to melt some butter right now.
And you better get a lemon, too.
Now.
All right.
God,
now,
I can't even
imagine. This next story is going to kind of make you cringe.
Oh, good.
Yeah. Roy Creever, a 12-year-old boy from Luck, Wisconsin, was attacked by an otter while he was swimming in the lake there.
Oh, my God.
Yes, now here's the bad news. Rory is getting rabies shots as a precaution.
Wow.
Well, that's almost a relief. I'll tell you why, because I thought the story was going to go to the part of his body the otter bit, and that, I wasn't ready for that at all. So,
well,
I think
yeah.
rabies shots could be blessed relief. I don't know.
And maybe they should have just hosed him off.
Oh, well.
I've heard this term several times tonight. I'm beginning to wonder.
Dr. Day, does your staff know where the bites were inflicted?
No, and we can't really say because he's a 12-year-old boy.
Oh,
well,
I forgot about that. We can't even give out his name, can we?
No. Yes, we already did, so it's too late for that.
You know,
all
I
right,
was
we're
thinking,
heading off
Dr.
to
Day,
Oak
before
Hill.
You go any further, hold on just a second.
All right.
I wonder what lead guitarist of the Kinks, Dave Davies, would think about that.
Right. I've been through the same thing with my brother Ray. We go through these biting fits every once in a while, and we don't get shots.
I am so sorry.
Dave, are you still there? No, I think we lost him.
Oh, he's gone.
All right. Well, exterminators have been called in to deal with snakes sighted at a high school in Fayette County, West Virginia.
Oh, I'm going.
Yeah. Now, Principal Timothy Payton says that he saw snakes in the hallway, and students are reporting seeing snakes in the gymnasium.
Cool.
Yeah, I know. We would be excited, but
yeah.
So why do you think those snakes are there?
High water.
They're trying to get an education, I guess. You're right.
That's exactly
trying to get a little training.
What was I thinking? I mean, dummy me says high water.
It was a snake show?
No, I think they just showed up. We'll take Bill as the bad guy.
No, not me.
No. All right, we need a little help from our friends in Florida. Now, as we've been reporting the last couple of years, the invasive lionfish has taken over a lot of the coastline there, and they're destroying a lot of the natural environment, the fish that live there. The Fish and Wildlife Commission in Florida is promoting a new app to report sightings of the invasive lionfish. So if you see a lionfish, which is quite a beautiful animal, they want you to call them and let them know because they want to eradicate them.
How big a lie can that fish tell? Well, it's a lion fish. I'm curious what kind of a lie would they tell?
I knew that.
I'm from here, really. This is my neighborhood.
You've fallen in with a bad, bad crowd.
Yeah, that goes without saying.
That's a fact.
I knew the job was dangerous when I took it. All right, why is it important to clean up after yourself? Well, the Virginia Aquarium and Marine Science Center has reported that a 45-foot juvenile female sea whale that died in the Elizabeth River had ingested a piece of plastic that prevented it from eating. And if you're out, and if it's not your trash, pick it up. Don't let it blow.
Yeah, that's bad.
Sucked. We rescued a raccoon years ago that had stuck his head in one of those Coke, you know, the six-packs with the ring.
Yeah. Yeah.
And if we hadn't have found him, he would have just slowly strangled to death. So we, I cut the ring off, and he proceeded to bite the hell out of me.
Well, that's what they do best.
Did you have to get rabies shots?
No, I didn't. I didn't volunteer.
For no, in fact, they had to give the raccoon rabies shots.
Yeah. My line of work, a gallon of peroxide does miracles.
Okay.
He drinks it. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, we've got some birthdays to celebrate. The Denver Zoo is celebrating the birthday of its oldest resident, a 58-year-old hippo named Birdie. Birdie's 58 years old. Also in Tucson, Arizona, we have a female African elephant that was born at the Tucson's Reed Park Zoo. And in Oklahoma City, the officials at the Oklahoma City Zoo and Botanical Gardens say a female western lowland gorilla has been born there. But the bad news is the mother doesn't want to have anything to do with it. It's not taking care of it at all, so the zoo officials are providing care for the baby gorilla.
That happens a lot with those, and I think a lot of it has to do with being in captivity.
Do you know why? Do you know why gorillas have such large nostrils?
Now, sir.
Here we go.
They have large fingers.
Oh God!
Makes sense, doesn't it?
I was at the Cincinnati Zoo this weekend, and I watched a gorilla pick his nose and eat it.
Well, that's just plain rude. That's just plain rude.
That's what I said, but, you know, everybody clapped.
Not to make any comparison, though, I did the Oprah Winfrey show, and I saw Oprah Winfrey pick her nose, but she didn't eat it.
You've got to be joking.
No, I'm not.
I thought she could afford. Can't she afford somebody to do that for her?
I would think
I'm
so, yeah.
I'm serious. Because when I walk out for the segment, I got this goofiest grin on my face because I saw Oprah Winfrey pick her nose. And I'll tell you right now.
Well, that brings the obvious question up. What did she do with the work product, so to speak?
She's a twirler and a dropper.
Okay, all right.
Not a flipper?
No.
Excuse me, guys, I got to take some more medicine.
All right, gentlemen, settle down. All right, here's a story from kind of a confusing story from Juneau, Alaska. The population of black-tailed deer in southeast Alaska seems to have rebounded from the harsh winters years ago, and the hunting is going well.
Where's the punchline? I can't find it anywhere.
Exactly.
Where's that story going?
Back to Oprah.
He had to hose himself down.
Read that story again, Dr. Day. Read it slower.
Yeah.
The population of black-tailed deer in southeast Alaska appears to have rebounded from harsh winters years ago.
Oh.
And the hunting is going well.
Oh, okay.
There's more of them.
There's more of them, yeah.
So the population dwindled, so they're coming back, and what's the best way to take care of it? Just shoot them, I guess.
Yeah, just blast them.
See, it's confusing, isn't it?
Yeah, it was.
Yeah, all right. A family of grizzly bears that have eaten corn and carrots from a garden in the Creston area of Montana have been captured and relocated to a remote area in the Flathead Indian Reservation there. Which is good, I guess. They're just going to eat the vegetables there at the Indian Reservation. So. Why don't they just feed them? I mean,
we've crapped on those Indians from day one.
Yeah.
We have not been kind.
Hey, what do you think the tabloids would have paid for a picture of Oprah picking her nose?
You know, I regret to this day that I didn't have a camera. I was in a sound booth, and she was in the main booth with all the producers and directors, and she was standing clear in the back, and she had no idea that myself and my baboon was in this darkened booth, and I realized, because she's not very tall, and I'm looking at her with the baboon. I go, well, I'm talking to the baboon. That shows you my mentality. I said, Dolly, I said, that's Oprah. And Oprah looked from side to side, and all of a sudden, there she went. And I thought, My God, that would have been worth $10,000 if I'd had a camera.
Easily. Easily.
Man, if you had the booger, what do you think you'd got for that?
You'd think with all her money, she'd have somebody to do that for her.
You know, I did the commencement address for Western Boone Junior and Senior High School, and I mentioned that story. And so that kind of shows you how that went.
Well,
they laugh.
She puts her pants on the same way you and I do.
They do.
Anyway.
And I will tell you, that is the only studio that I've ever been into, and we've taken animals out for Johnny Carson, Merv Griffin, the Today Show, and the Oprah studio was the only studio that I've ever been in that looks bigger in person than it does on television.
Really?
Yeah. Johnny Carson's studio was real small. I mean, it was, they just used so many different camera angles that it appeared that it was much larger than it actually was.
Oh.
But the Oprah and the Oprah people were the nicest. They also paid us, which Johnny Carson never did.
Wow.
And we missed it when they broadcasted it, so I called up and talked to the producer, and within 2 days, I had a videotape of that show.
Yeah, but did she give you a Buick?
No.
Yeah.
I that would have been nice, too.
Or your supply of bubble wax.
But anyway, yeah.
All right, well, let's get on with this Wild World News. Finish it up so we can get on with this show.
Oh, yeah. It's begun.
All right, now here's a follow-up to a story we did a couple of weeks ago. Authorities say an owl that, remember the owl story that went missing?
Yeah.
From the Atlanta Zoo? Well,
mm-hmm.
It's been found on a front porch about a half a mile away from the zoo.
Oh.
The owl is back. And I'm guessing that it stopped there to wait for somebody to rescue it, so it wouldn't have to hunt for its food anymore.
I reckon.
Yeah, pretty much.
But now we can sleep nights. Gets back.
Take me back to the zoo.
Yeah.
All right, that's the local news. Police have found the missing snake in Cicero.
Oh, really?
Cicero police have found a 6-foot reticulated python that's been missing for a couple of weeks. The snake was found in an outbuilding a few blocks from the owner's residence. Had all the people in the neighborhood in a panic because this
should have called me.
Six-foot reticulated python.
I should have called
me.
How
big was it? How big was it?
6 foot.
We didn't even use one that small, did we?
No. We up in Syracuse, New York, we used a 19-foot reticulated python and wrapped it around you in a straitjacket and hoisted you 30 feet above the stage, and it had him a restriction hold that he thought he was going to die, and I thought he was just acting so we could see the blood vessels popping.
He was choking me to death.
It was killing him up there. And I finally one of us dawned on us and says, you know, I think he's in trouble.
Bill might be dying.
That is rather chilling.
Well, they brought me down. My whole face was completely busted, all the blood vessels and everything, because he got me around the neck, and I really had not planned on that.
Wow.
Of course, I was in a straitjacket, so what the hell, you know. Well, then they knew you were crazy.
Bill, how many individual brushes with death have you had?
It depends on the stunts. You know, some of them looked, in fact, some of the most successful probably were more dangerous, or not as dangerous as the one that maybe didn't look. I'd say the most dangerous is when I had this 65-ton locomotive come at me at 45 mile an hour, and I fell down between the tracks, and then it ran over me and missed me by about a foot and about 0.3 seconds. I remember
my
that.
My God.
And when I shot it, there were a bunch of people who were shooting it from Europe, and they didn't get the right camera angle, so they said they wanted me to do it again, so I ended up having to do it twice.
Oh. That's just frightening.
Can you run that again?
No, I wouldn't even think about doing it. In fact, I can't even watch that stuff anymore.
Well, I saw a clip on television once. You were being buried alive in a coffin of some sort with cement being poured on it. And, well, something collapsed, did it not?
Well, it was actually a performance that was done by a guy named Joe Burris. He was handcuffed and chained and put in a plexiglass coffin and then put under 7 tons of dirt and cement. And it ended up killing him. And they had it on this show that was national called Current Affair. And I called them and I said, hey, I got 3 or 4 world records. How about you putting me on this show if you're using escape artists? And they said, well, why don't you see if you can duplicate this stunt and we'll cover you. So 2 years later, I did it. But I found out that the only way it could be done is there was no way that a plexiglass coffin was going to hold 7 tons of dirt and cement. You know, getting out of handcuffs and chains was no problem. But when it collapsed, you wanted to be out of harm's way, and then you have enough faith in your backhoe guy to dig you up. That was the only way you could survive.
Bill, correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe that the backhoe that you had ordered to dig didn't have the right size bucket on it, and that caused an additional problem.
Well, not only that, and you were there, Chris, you were there at the burial with the cement.
Right.
Also, the guy who was the backhoe operator that I'd practiced with to dig me out of a hole, because I'd practice it, was in Texas, and it was one of the salesmen at Hot 96 that had some backhoe experience, and this was like 2 days before. And he says, here, let me try. So I said, well, let's see what you can do. And I said, that guy would take my head off.
Jeez.
I had to fly this guy in from Texas to do it. So,
well,
of course, you were up on the top side when that thing collapsed. I don't know what the reaction was up on the top side, other than what I've seen on, you know, video and stuff, but...
Well, we weren't expecting that. That was
you didn't
surface for a while.
I was down there for 20 minutes, almost 25, and I had air for a good 20 minutes. But the trouble is you're so scared and you're just in this pocket that you're hoping they're going to dig you up, and that thing didn't crush you to death, and you just put your faith there. That was probably the closest to asphyxiation I ever came to. So,
well, that was a great promotion because the television aired all the people coming by and saying hi and looking down the tube and dropping stuff down. That was a great promotion.
Well, that was another burial. That was when I was buried alive with a 10-foot python, 2 tarantulas, and a rattlesnake, where I was down there for like 3 days. You come by the gravesite.
At the drive-in?
Pardon?
Was it at the drive-in?
No, not at the drive-in, I don't think. There's a guy who used to go around and do buried alive. He never did them with snakes or spiders or stuff, but actually radio stations all over the country used to do buried alive, and then the radio promotions like Block of Ice. There were a lot of guys that went around the country doing that kind of stuff.
You know,
in the 70s and 80s.
One of your burials, we had the burial phone line. And I was at a friend's house the night you were still in your crypt, and we called the burial phone line after several brews, and he tried to sell you aluminum siding. And you said, and your words were, do you realize that I'm right now buried with a tarantula, a python, and 12 scorpions? And my friend goes, and he pulled it off perfectly, goes, well, if you don't want to buy the crap, just tell me.
Well, now, when Bill was buried, when I was at Hoosier 96, we had camera. We were televising Bill in the coffin.
Yeah, I could see they could see me down in the coffin with his tarantula and snake, and then I could see them up on top. And then there would always be, and you could talk because I had a microphone down there, and you could always talk to the audience, and they'd always say, is there anybody that doesn't believe that I'm not buried down here, I'm somewhere else? And they'd say, oh, yeah, I don't believe it. And so be some dumb guy trying to impress his girlfriend, come over where the air hole was, and I have him drop down a bottle of water, a plastic bottle of water, and I'd drink all of it, and then I'd piss in it, and then I'd have him bring it up.
Was that on camera?
Oh, no doubt that I was down in the grave.
That was on camera, too.
Oh, yeah. Crowd loved it. It's Carney, man. Carney.
I have heard it all.
That's why we love Bill.
Oh, God. My Lord.
All right. Well, let's finish up the Wild World news. We're going to do the Wild World facts, which we're doing scorpions tonight in honor of Bill.
Oh,
but
good.
Before we do that, we're going to play Celebrity Birthdays.
Oh, cool.
All right, who's gotten older this week? Now, gentlemen, how old is rock musician Ginger Baker of Cream and the Blind Faith?
Oh, man, he's... I'm going to say... I bet that son of a gun is 75 years old.
I was going to say 73.
And 69. He's just one of the crustiest. How old?
69.
Well,
I'll say
75 years old. I don't know how old. He is.
I'll say 100.
Have you ever read an interview with him in recent years?
No.
He is the crustiest human being
without a
who's
doubt
ever drawn breath.
I agree. There's a documentary out that you have to see. You will not believe it. When it's over, your mouth will just be open. You'll be going, oh, my God, what was that?
Yeah.
His son's going to be on the
show. Okay, we have a winner. Ginger is 75.
I'll be done.
Ooh,
it was a guess. I'm not Googling, I swear.
Okay, Bruce. How much do I weigh?
Google it. Can you move over to the left a little bit? There's a shadow, and I can't quite tell. I don't know. I don't know, but no more than you did 40 years ago. I'll tell you that much. You've done better than most of us in that regard. I got to tell you the truth, Chris.
Oh, I don't know about that. I saw Bill a couple of months ago, and he's hanging in there himself.
He's still
Bill's always
that's true too.
Shape,
yeah. All right, gentlemen, we're going to Gene Simmons of Kiss. How old is Gene?
That's hard.
Not
62.
As old as Ginger Baker.
No, I'd say he's 62.
I don't think he would be much beyond that. I don't honestly know. But he'd be 60-something.
69.
Is he really?
I don't know.
This is Bill.
Okay.
All right.
I'm detecting a pattern here.
There it is. What do you think, Chris?
Oh, Lord. I'll go 70.
Hmm. What about that steel wool-like hair of his?
Yeah,
what about it?
It's just...
No, 74 on the hair.
Well, that's got me.
Yeah, I think you're right. The hair is probably 10 years older than he is.
Yeah,
I would hope.
Gene Simmons has turned 65.
Oh,
okay.
My word.
Oh. All right.
All right, our next celebrity up is Elvis Costello.
Oh, that's hard.
Yeah, now Elvis is younger than I thought, but don't let that deter you from your estimation.
50.
No, that math wouldn't work.
No, that wouldn't
no.
work.
Oh, damn.
63, maybe.
Phew, 63 seems young. Okay,
yeah.
I'll go with 63.
Bill.
64. Well, you're all kind of close. Elvis turned 60.
Did he really?
Oh, really? Yeah. Now this one is going to kind of throw you a little bit. Robert Plant.
Oh God, 110. He's been rode hard.
Upper sixties. 68. Maybe.
Yeah.
Bill.
Well, 67. Ooh, Robert Plant turned 66.
Oh,
okay.
My.
Right ballpark. Okay.
He's lying. He's lying.
You know, I kind of agree with you. He has to be older than that, but yeah. Yeah.
No.
Okay, singer-songwriter John Hyatt.
Oh, my God.
Chris, you'll have the best insight into this one.
No, you know, John Hyatt was an interesting story because he had to go to Nashville to become a star. He was kicking and shuffling around Indianapolis, couldn't even buy a gig, and he didn't have any records out. I never even heard of John Hyatt until he went to Nashville.
That's tough. He'd
be in his early 60s, wouldn't he?
I'd go with early. I've got 62.
Okay.
I think we have a winner.
Have a... All right.
How old he is?
Yeah. John Hyatt is 62.
Oh, all right. Well, there you go.
Okay, Daryl Dragon.
Oh.
You mean the captain?
That's
captain,
right.
That's right.
His brothers have been on the show, Dennis and...
What's a dragon?
His Daryl was dragon.
Three tails.
What kind of
a head.
Show is this, anyway?
Sometimes not very good.
People getting hosed down and dragging and...
Who knows? Early 60s again, he's probably that ballpark. I don't know.
He's sick. He's got Parkinson's, so...
Oh, does he? I didn't know that. Well,
yeah, that's why his
that.
Wife's leaving him because of insurance situation. Because they're no longer in love. It's just a financial deal. We know
that's
that because we've
thing.
Had his brothers on the show. And they
What do his
music.
Brothers do?
They're musicians.
Yeah, they're How surf did, musicians.
Yeah, in fact, his one produced their biggest hit, Love Will Keep Us Together.
Okay.
And they're still doing, they still produce records out in L.A. In fact, one of them lives in the ranch Steve Miller owned out in Colorado, or Oregon, excuse me.
Yep, that's
But they've been on the show. They've got a couple albums they've put out. Pretty cool.
Yeah, pretty entertaining.
Yeah.
Well,
good
Daryl Dragon turned 72.
Wow.
God love him.
Wow.
Hard to imagine.
Yeah.
Yeah. God love him.
All right, now I threw in Belinda Carlisle as our last singer just because I love Belinda Carlisle.
You do?
Oh, yes, I do.
You got the beat.
That's right. And I'll just tell you, Belinda turned 56 this last week.
Well,
all right, it's time for the Wild World Facts of the Day, and we're doing Scorpions tonight in honor of Bill Shirk.
I'm sitting down.
All right, there are about 1,200 species of scorpions. And as we know, the largest is the emperor, which can measure up to about 7 inches long.
Bill's been buried with those.
Yes, he has. And they're quite impressive.
They're ugly.
Scorpion family.
And they
they're
hurt
ugly.
When they sting.
Now, the general rule of thumb when trying to detect how venomous scorpions are is to look at the size of their pinchers and their tail. If they have large pinchers and a slim tail, it's likely their sting is not very venomous. But small pinchers and a fat tail, and now you're in trouble.
Oh. We had, at one time, we had something called the Leora scorpion from the Middle East. I had four of those, and it's the most venomous creature on this planet. And every morning, my wife would get up and count the number of scorpions in that terrarium.
Whoa.
That's probably a good idea.
Those scorpions killed more soldiers in the Middle East than bullets. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, bad.
Glad we didn't use those.
Yeah, well.
Yeah, they probably
really,
have to
need,
shoot out of a gun.
We need you around. So
Well, now, let me ask you this, Larry. Is a scorpion a spider?
It's an arachnid.
In the same family.
It's like tarantulas and no, technically not, but it's in the big family of arachnids. So, and but we did a stunt we did a couple stunts. We did some stunts with some Middle Eastern scorpions with Bill one time, and then we did that when Bill did his documentary. We used some black emperor scorpions. And we poured him on top of him while he was in chains or
in a crystal casket, by the way.
In a crystal casket, and they were hanging off his lip and stuff. And and all that crap. I'm the one that ends up getting stung, and I got stung right in the elbow. My God.
Well, you know, scorpions are nature's way of saying, screw you, I'm going to combine lobsters, spiders, wasps, and nightmares.
Yeah. And they have, yes, that's true. No, Now, scorpions can slow down their metabolism when food is scarce. They can survive on only one meal each year.
Whoa.
Yeah. I know this from personal experience that scorpions can be seen easily at night with an ultraviolet light, you know, or a black light, you know, due to a fluorescent material found in their hard outer covering, which gives them a glow-in-the-dark appearance. Now, while I was living in Panama, Central America, I was in my room underneath the houses there. All the houses are built on concrete stilts. So they had little maids' quarters underneath, and that was my room. And I had black lights. It's 1972, black lights, posters, all the stuff. My girlfriend's down there. I see a little dust bunny roll across the floor, glowing, and didn't think anything about it. And then I saw it climbing up a sheet that was in a chair in the room and realized it was a scorpion. But, yes, they do glow quite brightly in a black light.
They do. Yep.
Now,
here's
an interesting fact to kind of close this out tonight so we can get on with our show. Scorpions and cockroaches are among the only animals known to survive the detonation of a nuclear weapon.
Well, that's wonderful.
That's true. Yeah.
Somehow I guess that's okay. And a cockroach can live for 1 week after you cut its head off. I want you to think about that as you're falling asleep tonight. That's the Wild World News for August 28th.
Well,
I think that explains.
Job done by Dr. Henry Day and his staff at the Wild World News headquarters in Indianapolis, Indiana. Now HD, newly renovated, beautiful knotty pine paneling. It's absolutely spacious, and we appreciate his staff and his work that he puts in each week here on Wild World. We also remind everyone that this part of the program is brought to you by Tire Service Plus and Jerry Jones at 317-243-0700. They keep our animal truck on the road so we can travel miles and miles and miles to schools as we're getting ready to start our school tour here in just a few weeks. And they do make it possible for Wild World to be on Blog Talk Radio.
Oh, yeah.
Well, the British invasion, along with the transistor radio, brought radio to life in the early 60s. And we were glued to those radios, listening to the latest songs delivered by people, gentlemen, whatever, the voices that we loved. And tonight we have with us three voices that we grew up with. We're so happy to have them on the show. Bill Shirk, who I mentioned earlier, was the one that promoted a radio station in the most unique way. He became the world's greatest escape artist according to the Guinness Book of World Records. What a success he's been. Chris Connor from the Buzzard here in Indianapolis, and late night, early morning, he was it was great to hear Chris Connor on the air. And Bruce Munson, and I've always said this about Bruce Munson, he could read a phone book and make it interesting. And it's a pleasure to have these radio icons on Wild World. Welcome, gentlemen.
Speaking of radio, we've all had a chance to do something with it. This is the anniversary of the first paid radio commercial. First radio commercial broadcast on this date, 1922.
Wow.
And who was the... I'm looking at something, but I can't... It was an ad for the Hawthorne Court Apartments in Jackson Heights, Queens, on WEAS in New York City.
The voice of... Go ahead, I'm sorry, Bruce Munson.
And, well, thanks to that, that paved the way for guys like Bill and Chris and myself to make a buck now and then, you know?
Well, God bless them. Because I have to say that, you know, we love listening to the artists that you presented, but the radio personalities were just as important as the music they played, I always thought.
I hope.
Well, it's certainly a changed world now. It's very, very different than it was back in the days. Like WNAP that Chris was on and Bruce was on, like, was the trendsetter for FM Top 40 album-type radio. I mean, for the whole country, not just Indianapolis.
I'm sorry, go ahead, please.
Chris, you were there from day one, so go ahead. I didn't mean to interrupt you. I'm sorry.
Oh, I was just taking some more medicine, Bruce.
And that, too, explains the success of WNAP, right?
Well, Bill has pretty well said it. The last time I had fun on radio was when I was working with Bill, and sadly, there isn't any fun to be found, except maybe an outlet like where we're on tonight, something like that, but it just got so homogenized, and the fact that one guy could own 400 or 500 radio stations kind of spoiled
yeah.
the whole bunch.
Yeah. But when the conglomerates squeezed out the creative types, it became a very different world.
That's for sure. Yeah. The creativity isn't there. The excitement is not there. And, of course, the Internet wasn't there.
Yeah, for sure.
Right, there you go.
Yeah.
There you go.
Yeah, well, now Internet radio has really become, I don't know, I'm not saying it's going to replace radio, but it sure is a lot of fun to do.
Well it's taken its share.
Suddenly anybody who has a computer can have a little radio station.
Sure.
You know, the idea is to find a way to make money with it. And about the only guy I know of who knows how to do that is on the panel tonight, and that's Bill. I mean, he has done, I'm telling you, the guy's a genius. Bill, you are to be congratulated.
Well, I appreciate that. Appreciate that very much. Thank you. And like I say, it takes a lot of people, and it's a combination of that and timing and luck.
Bill, I've made a comment that I think you'll probably agree with, and that is that there are guys who do radio to make money. With you, it's the opposite. You make money to do more radio. I mean, radio is the end. It's the motivator, not the almighty dollar in your case.
Well, I wanted to be on the air so bad that if I didn't own it, I wouldn't be on the air.
Well, but you know, Bill, I know you say that in radio there was hardly a day ever that wasn't fun.
Yeah.
In some way.
Yep.
Didn't Tom Cochran tell you something, Bill, that really inspired you to become a radio personality?
Well, I my father put WERK on the radio in Muncie, Indiana, and I was the janitor. And I was cleaning up around the AP-UPI machine, which you never hear of these days. And Cochran was there, and he said, you know, you ought to quit sweeping up. They're looking for a weekend news guy. Maybe you ought to take the job. And I said, hell, I don't want to work for my dad. And he said, man, the chicks will... He said, the chicks will love it. And I said, when do I start?
That's right. Yep.
That's almost like rock and roll musicians.
Yeah.
Why do you start playing?
But back then, there was only you could only hear LBC and ERK. That you know, there was really no television, there was no internet, there was no cable. The other radio stations you really couldn't hear because it was all AM. FM wasn't even around. The competition wasn't there. You know, like when I came to Indianapolis in '72, there was 5 radio stations that were all AMs. A couple of them were daytimers. And now with the FM and everything, there's 46 signals that get into the Indianapolis market.
That's remarkable.
And you would think, too, that there would be the, and which I know being around radio as little as I have been, that there would be more creativity with that many stations. But they're afraid, aren't they, Bill?
Well, it's cut the cost. The value of radio stations from what it was 12 years ago is about 25 to 35 cents on the dollar of what you could have sold it for back then. It is still growing. The Internet has killed it. And, you know, newspapers lost 50% of their business, so has magazines. Well, so radio is holding its own, and it always have a place because it's always in the car.
Mm-hmm.
But it's that you have to keep the overhead low because most of the operations are owned by conglomerates who answer to their stockholders, and if you don't show a profit, and really the only cost in radio is believe it or not, the talent. That's the big cost. So they don't do talent, and then a lot of stuff now is actually what I call virtual. They call voice tracking, where a guy can actually be on the air, and if you're really not paying a whole lot of attention, sounds like he's doing it live. In fact, I have a station out in Kauai, and I have Sechrist on the air. I got a couple other guys, you know, that are national people, and it sounds like they're local coming from Kauai, and it's all for trade or barter. So right there, all of a sudden, every job that I would have on this Kauai station, I'm able to barter and use national talent.
Wow.
It's a different world.
It is a different world. Yeah.
When we were working at ERK, Bruce, we had 21 people working for a daytime station where we signed on in December at 8 o'clock and signed off at 5:15. We were running 20 minutes an hour worth of commercials, which you couldn't even begin to do that today.
You could do it, that's true. Now, the fact is, Bill, I can tell you this from my perspective. Only about half of us were working. Now, that's a fact. But anyway. But what an amazing cast of characters. Oh, man.
Yeah.
Quick story. The setting, the station where Bill launched his career, was in a rural part of Delaware County. They needed a site where they could put up six towers because of the unusual directional pattern of the station. But there was a former farmhouse and a garage building connected. And because of the way, it was quite a ways to go from the garage building up a hallway up to the main house where the bathroom was. So some of the guys found it quicker and easier to just open the back door and, you know, relieve themselves out the back door. One day, we heard a blood-curdling scream. There was a sales guy that was known as Goober, Kenny McGath, Goober. He let out a yelp, and he said, "God damn you, Horace." Seems the engineer, Horace Smith, had taken a tractor battery and buried some copper wire to try to discourage this bathroom practice.
Was that the same engineer that we found upstairs where he used to sleep sometimes in his drawer? He had all those dirty magazines?
Yeah, I think so. I think it was. Yes. Oh, those days.
Well, I went up there to do a show when your brother had an afternoon show of some sort.
The Hotline.
Bob, yeah.
Yeah.
And we talk about animals. And, my God, I brought the show to a screeching halt, and I told them that Clarence the Cross-Eyed Lion, star of Hatari and all those various films, was actually retarded.
What?
And, and your brother gave me a look like, oh, my God, what?
Remarkable. Remarkable.
And then we did a bit. Now this was at WXLW once a week we'd do an animal segment as if I'd actually brought an animal into the studio. So basically we had animal sound effects going, and I'd explain to the folks about the water buffalo that I had in the studio at that moment. We were telling them the natural history of the water buffalo.
Oh, yeah.
Do you remember?
I liked it when you brought in the elephant and he peed on me.
Well,
you know,
I'm guessing when that happens, when an elephant pees on you, you stay peed on.
That's for sure.
Well,
and then he tells
like,
you it's raining outside.
Yeah, it's kind of like that ice buck challenge they're doing now. Because when they go, it's yeah, needless to say.
Well, that makes more sense.
Yeah. Our guest tonight, guys, icons of radio here in Indy, Bill Shirk, Bruce Munson, Chris Connor, we're having too much fun. We're going to take a short break. We'll be right back. You're listening to Wild World on Blog Talk Radio.
Stay tuned. We'll be back with more of Larry Batson's Wild World here on Blog Talk Radio.
Sassy! Sassy! this week's episode, Bobcat in the Cave.
Gosh, Johnny, playing in the cave sure is neat.
Oh, boy, a kitty cat.
Cassie, the kitty cat's yelling.
What, Sassy? It's not a kitty? It's a bobcat? Speaking of cats, you like to stress the importance of adopting cats from animal shelters? Over 5 million cats go into animal shelters every year? And with millions of healthy cats to choose from, it's a shame more people don't adopt from shelters?
This bobcat heavy. Help, Sassy!
Why bother? We'll just get into more trouble tomorrow?
What's that supposed to mean? Oh, nuts.
Sassy is brought to you by the Ad Council and the ShelterPetProject.org. Remember, adopt.
Here's a hot topic about our wildlands and living with the natural role of fire.
Yard work is not just a matter of pride when you live in the wildland-urban interface. It's also about survival. Here are some FireWise tips that can help protect your home from wildland fire. Prune your trees 6 to 10 feet above the ground. Remove dead leaves and branches and dispose of them before fire season. Water your lawn regularly and store firewood away from the house. Be prepared for a fire emergency by having a plan for your family and pets. Learn more at our website and then sit back and enjoy. You worked for it.
This hot topic was made possible by the Teresa and H. John Hines III Foundation. Learn more about the natural role of fire, how to protect your community, and get the latest fire information. Visit the National Interagency Fire Center website at NIFC.gov. That's NIFC.gov.
We're Rascal Flats. There's a place where ordinary people do extraordinary things every day. That place is called the American Red Cross. When you help the American Red Cross, you help America. Call 1-800-RED-CROSS or visit redcross.org to learn more.
Ranger Station, Ranger speaking.
Yeah, hi. I'd like to report a bear sighting.
Location?
In the forest near the side of the road.
No need for alarm, sir. The forest is where bears live.
But this was no ordinary bear.
No ordinary bear?
Yeah, one second I'm having a smoke taken in the view. Next thing I know, I am face to face with Smokey Bear.
Let me guess, Smokey had a tip for you.
He did. He must have seen me toss my cigarette on the ground. He told me never to do that because it only takes one spark to start a wildfire.
He's a smart bear. Did you know that 9 out of 10 wildfires are caused by humans? That means 9 out of 10 wildfires can be prevented.
That's what Smokey said. I had no idea.
That's why Smokey's famous, and you're not.
Good point.
Get your Smokey on. If you see someone in danger of starting a wildfire, step in and make a difference, because 9 out of 10 wildfires are caused by humans. Brought to you by Smokey Bear, the U.S. Forest Service, your state forester, and the Ad Council. Learn more at SmokeyBear.com.
Only you can prevent wildfires.
Welcome back to Larry Batson's Wild World here on Blog Talk Radio. Once again, here's your host, Larry Batson.
We'll be back with Chris Connor, Bill Shirk, Bruce Munson, radio icons from Indianapolis here. Well, I should say Central Indiana, man. And we'll be talking with them some more. Gosh, what a great show. I want to remind everyone that this part of Wild World is brought to you by McGregor Mountain Lodge in beautiful Estes Park, Colorado. If you've never had the opportunity to visit the Rockies, you owe it to yourself at least once in your lifetime. I'm going to tell you right now, when you look at those mountains, it's a spiritual experience. And right now, it's a perfect time to head out there. And what a great place to stay, McGregor Mountain Lodge. It's right on the boundaries of Rocky Mountain National Park. You'll have the front range looking out your front window. Absolutely spectacular. The fall colors are coming in. The elk are coming down from the high country, and they're bugling, and the rut's going on. It's absolutely spectacular show. You can see it nowhere. You can watch it on television, but to be there in person, it's absolutely special. Go to their website, McGregorMountainLodge.com. They have a webcam. Now would not be a good time to look at it, but it's a 24-hour webcam. And you can check it out, and I assure you, I guarantee you, if you decide to head out to Colorado, Estes Park, and stay at McGregor Mountain Lodge, you'll have a great time. And they make it possible for Wild World to be on Blog Talk Radio. I want to remind everybody that you can go into our archives and listen to past shows that we've had on Blog Talk. 206 of them. I can't believe it. Such guests as Rick Derringer from the Johnny Winter Group, Bobby Caldwell from Edgar Winter,
oh gosh, it goes on. Al Jardine from the Beach Boys, Dave Davies from the Kinks, Tony Kaye from Yes, Jimmy Greenspan from Three Dog Night, many, many artists, as well as scientists and archaeologists, and really great guests. And you can go back absolutely free of charge and listen to them. Go to the website, just simply Google Larry Batson, that's two T's, Wild World, Blog Talk Radio, and you'll get on. Our guest tonight, gosh, what a special show. We have with us three broadcasting icons, people that Dr. Day and myself both grew up with, and gosh, it's been a truly spectacular show already. Bill Shirk, world's greatest escape artist and owner of many, many radio stations, and has been said tonight, he's a radio genius. In fact, I think in the documentary Radio Wars, that was brought out, and he said some of the most, he made some of the best comments analyzing the secrets behind successful radio. Chris Connor, who we enjoyed very, very much early in the morning on WNAP, and of course his late night gig where I'd call him a lot and request the latest Jimi Hendrix or whatever was popular at that time. And Bruce Munson, who I have to confess, when we were putting this show together, I felt like a stalker because every time I would call him, he was either on the golf course or he was with his family, which I totally understood. And one night I was getting ready to call him, and I realized it was 1:27 in the morning. I go, whoa, can't do that. That's a big bet.
Hey, so really, we never sleep.
He should have an associate producer title tonight because he helped arrange to get the beloved Chris Connor on the show. We're so happy and glad. And it's truly been spectacular, Dr. Day.
I know. It's like we're just reliving a little bit of history now.
We are.
Well, I appreciate you, Larry, putting all this together. It's. I'm happy to talk to my old friends, and I'm glad you made it happen.
Well, we're thrilled. We did a show, not to pat ourselves on the back, but we will. We did Indianapolis rock and roll legends, and we had on the show Carl Story from Faith Band, Asher Ben Ruby from Roadmaster, Toby Meyer from Roadmaster, and Dave Bennett, guitar player for Faith Band, and it was truly a spectacular show.
And they enjoyed it.
Oh, they did. I mean, I didn't hardly say a word the whole 90 minutes. I mean,
there was no room to talk. Yeah.
Every once in a while, I say, "Well, let's listen to a Roadmaster song, or let's listen to a Faith Band song." But it was truly a spectacular show, and I will confess that there was a couple naughty, naughty words. But this is the internet.
You don't say.
And the Adamsmaster is still on the air in St. Louis.
Yeah, he is. Yeah, he's still doing it. So,
Carl Story and Bennett, when they were first starting their career in Muncie, Indiana, and I had a nightclub at the time, and they used to play at my nightclub on Thursday nights.
Wow.
Faith Band, just pack them in and have 50 people waiting to stand in line to get in.
You just hated that, didn't you?
I hated it, yes. I hated Mondays and Tuesdays.
Because you were closed?
No, because there was nobody there and I was losing money.
Oh, God.
So I just just opened on Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, and Saturday. So.
Yeah.
But at the time, when I opened the nightclub, you had to be open on Monday and Tuesday nights, and then they changed it.
Ah.
How has Central Indiana become such a hotbed for broadcasters? There are so many, have been and still are, so many excellent broadcasters from this area. You know, we travel all over the country, and I get a chance to listen to radio in different places. And, you know, they just don't stack up. I mean, and I think the greatest example of that is the staff that they put together when they broadcast the Indianapolis 500 each year. Radio people, they pulled from different markets and stations and put them together with a truly, I always think, is the most exciting thing about that race is the radio broadcast. But even still, the broadcasters in this era, why does the Midwest, what, is it the corn? I don't know.
Well, I have no clue, but there are some.
Go ahead, Bruce.
Well, you put your finger on something interesting. One of the greatest talents that I think the airwaves have ever known is the late Lou Palmer, who was on the Speedway Network for years. He anchored it relatively late in his life, but he was part of it probably from the mid-50s onward. And Lou Palmer was a guy that could go into a studio with a 3x5 card with a few words written on it and ad-lib a 5-minute newscast.
Wow.
Yeah.
What he would often do, Bruce, if you recall, he would take and rip the AP wire, which is probably terminology most people listening to probably don't even know what I'm talking about, but the paper teletype machine that would print out the AP news, he would go and strip out each one of the stories that he was going to use. He'd put a paper clip on them, and then he would go into the news booth just as the intro was hitting the final note, and he would sit down. He'd take the paper clip off of the stack of stories he was going to read, and then he never looked at a single story. He twisted the paper clip into all kinds of contortions, but he never referred to any of those stories that he so meticulously ripped off the wire. He never did. He just ran with it off the top of his head.
Wow. Yeah. Extraordinary.
I had heard that Mike Ahearn, when he was on 8, that if there wasn't so much copy to read, that he could remember most of it. He didn't even need a teleprompter.
Maybe.
I mean, and the quality of voices. Bill, you had your broadcasting school. Now, I know David Letterman was a graduate of that. And
No. David Letterman worked at ERK. In fact, I think you were there at the same time, weren't you, Bruce?
Not quite. He preceded me by maybe 6 months.
Yeah, he worked for me for about 8 months, and then he went off and, did he go to NAP or did he go to 13? Eventually he ended up on 13.
I think he went to jail 13 from work. He went to 13, if I recall right.
Yeah.
He freelanced on NAP. He provided a lot of material. Some he wrote for Tom Lewis to perform, and then other things that Dave would call and do himself, But he was at 13. He was at, want to say NTS, but he was at another station.
Yeah, he was at NTS when Jeff Smolian bought it with his dad, and they had the sports guy on in the morning, and they had Letterman doing middays, and then they had somebody else doing the afternoons. They were all recognizable people, and it just didn't work out because it was a daytime station. And I remember when they were changing staffs, I called Dave Letterman because he'd worked for me in Muncie and said, hey, how would you like to come work with Joe Pickett and all these guys over here, all the guys, the legends at the time, so to speak, at XLW? And he said, no, I'm going to take my dog and my truck and I'm heading to L.A. and I'm going to become a star.
That's right.
And I am so envious of you because I know you will. And
yeah.
He did.
Yeah.
Oh, and you
remarkable.
Just mentioned the name.
Didn't he offer you a job, Bruce, to come out and write for him?
Yeah, he did, as a matter of fact. And great, great visionary that I was, I said, no, they're going to go to law school. I wonder if it's too late to go back to him and say, you know what, maybe what you're talking about is more fun.
Right. Anyway, unfortunately, he's going to be done at the end of the year.
Yeah.
Well, I have to say on the Facebook, Bruce Munson has some of the best posts. I mean, that alone is worth the time spent on Facebook reading some of the stuff that Bruce puts on there.
It sure beats earning a living, let me tell you. Sit there on Facebook all day. Billing clients. But no, I stay on Facebook all day.
Bruce is the only weekender that I ever heard or ever knew of that would come to work in a Rolls Royce. and let me tell you one other little story. He was late for work one Saturday morning, and I was working. It was Saturday afternoon. He was going to take over from me around noon. No, I guess it probably was around 1 or 2 o'clock, whatever. But anyway, he's late. And so I'm hanging over like you do. You never leave the ship alone. So I'm sitting there, and about half an hour, 45 minutes later, he comes walking in, and he's got a tuxedo on. course, it's a blazing hot. It's in the middle of August when this happens. And we've gone to this wedding, left the wedding in the Rolls to come to work. The Rolls breaks down on the side of the road. And
yeah.
Bruce is just flabbergasted that nobody would pick up a guy in a tuxedo on the side of the road next to a Rolls Royce.
Go figure. Go figure. This was near Ellettsville, Indiana, on the way back from Evansville, and Gary Demery's wedding.
Gary Demery.
Yep.
The newsman.
That's right.
The Ellettsville doesn't surprise me that they wouldn't pick you up. We
no,
love the community.
No.
I
wouldn't pick me up either, I'm going to tell you the truth.
The one thing about Chris Conner that hasn't been mentioned is when we put WHHH on the air, Hoosier Hot 96.3, he was the morning man, and TLC, which was the urban station, and ZPL, which was the top 40 station, they were both big, powerful stations. We were just a 3,000-watt peep-opper, and the morning show and the rest of the whole station, it took us about a year, and we defeated both of those stations, which were stations of the year before and the year before that, and Chris was a very big part of making Hoosier Hot 96 a success.
It was a lot of fun, partner. It sure was.
It was. Eventually, one time, your wife and you did a morning show, man and wife, didn't you?
That's right.
Yeah.
As a matter of fact, yeah, sure did.
Yeah.
I'm glad she's in bed and not hearing me forget this.
Well, keep your voice down, for God's sakes.
Well, I have to say the morning show on NAP with Cochran and Chris and I think Ron Bilo and Bruce was phenomenal. I mean, the popularity of Bobby Tom now.
It was a lot of fun. It was a lot of fun.
You could tell that when you listened to them that they were all having a great time. And, boy, that's one of the key things in radio, especially back in those days. If you're having a good time, then your audience is having a good time.
That's right, Bill. And, you know, we were fortunate enough to have a guy who was running that ship who believed in letting the guys have a lot of rope and to even fail at times as long as they learned from it.
Mm-hmm.
And that allowed us to do a lot of nutty things that we'd have never, ever gotten past board anywhere else.
Well, I remember
that
raft race and how many thousands of rafts were going down White River. Of course, you couldn't do that today, but back in the day with the NAP's raft race.
Well, we started and we figured our first year if we had 75, we'd consider it a hit, and we had 400.
Now, these are rafts that they could get on and go down the river. So
yes. And
there's 400 of them constructed.
And then the last year that we had the race, we had 1,400.
Wow. Never happen today. Never happen today with today's radio.
No.
Like somebody pointed out the other day, you'd never get past the permitting process.
That's right.
Yeah. Well, them damn attorneys would get in there. Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah, that's right. Well, I wish I could argue, but I think you've hit the nail on the head.
Well, you even became a judge, didn't you?
No, you know what? I ran once for city court judge. Mercifully, I got beat. And I'm not going to complain about that.
Well, I feel for anyone that when they had the final arguments were up against you, Bruce, because, I mean, with your delivery and your voice, I mean, my God, it would be like the fellow, I can't think of his act, the actor in the Boston Legal.
Denny Crane.
What the heck?
Denny Crane?
The guy on the blacklist?
Not Shatner. Is that who you're talking about?
I can't think of his name.
Well,
he's done so much great. He's done so much great stuff. But I mean,
Alan Shore.
I'm going to tell you the truth. I think that I'm not. There's not much to be said one way or the other for what I do, but it is a fact. I have been in a courtroom before
when I'm arguing something to the court and the other attorney says, you know, you sound like that guy that does those Ovation commercials. literally, that did happen.
How many years did you do those?
Many. I don't know that I know the answer, but
that'd be 20.
Well over a decade and a half. Not quite 2 decades,
really?
But close.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
They're spectacular, I mean.
Well, they were. That's probably a bit. That's a little bit. Oh, I can't claim the word spectacular. They were kind of fun to do, but they were really disposable.
Did you write them?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay. Because it had your flavor.
Well, yeah, and I think the way that if they worked at all, I think the reason they worked is that they were disposable. So you didn't have to worry about them sounding like commercials sometimes.
Right.
Well, they did not sound like commercials. They didn't. They got a message across, and they were very unique.
Well, do one for us. Well, you were just kind of talking to the people listening to the radio. You were just talking to them.
Yeah.
Do one real quick.
Yeah, do one for
us. Do you remember one?
Yeah.
Are they still in business?
Part. I remember this part, $199.95. That's all I remember.
And,
that's the
and
best
yet,
I can do.
Yes, Ovation is still in business.
They are.
Hmm.
Now, with some changes, the guy that basically started the company and ran it for a number of years is gone now. Gary McCormick, great guy.
Yeah.
He passed away a couple of years ago and very much missed. Gary was a pleasure to work with. As were a number of the folks there. Before that, Mike Major and I-5 Eyes.
Well, and then, of course, Bill did the drag racing commercials.
NHRA. Mostly in the south part of the United States.
Give us a little bit of that, Bill. Give us a little NHRA.
Sunday!
Well, Bill did a better one. Bill did a better one yet. Better than drag strip commercials.
Triple X
Bill did commercials for the Blackford County Drive-In. Remember?
I remember when I took my girlfriend there and we went into the theater and looked up on the screen and I thought, what are they showing here? And it was Deep Throat. So
yeah,
I called it the Triple X capital of the world, Triple X.
Yeah.
Well, suddenly I don't feel bad about doing this show in just my sandals.
I remember I used to show up that guy after his Saturday night show and pick up $1,000 cash every week.
Wow.
Yep.
Wow.
They made money hand over fist for a while.
Oh, my heavens. It was the only adult theater around at the time. I don't know how they ever got away with it. It was in a different county than Delaware. I had never been able to get away with having it. We got a lot of complaints on the air about it, too.
Yeah, but it was the era before video cassettes.
Bruce, did you say making money hand over fist?
That was a very bad choice of words, wasn't it?
Very fitting. Fitting.
Yeah.
I told you I'm on medication.
Well, you mentioned it a time or two, and whatever you're on, keep taking it. That's all we can say.
I know, because when I posted for you guys to come on, I said we encourage our guests to drink heavily if they wish. So,
well, you didn't say anything about medication, but I guess you didn't have to.
We encourage that, too. I mean,
yep.
But anyway. So, Chris, what was your greatest moment in broadcasting?
Every minute that I had on the air was, I just loved it. It was never work. It was never a chore, and I got paid pretty decently for it.
Well, it was certainly a pleasure to listen to you, because I have to say, many a night, you brought the hits. We loved it, and it was, gosh.
Well, let me tell you something. Chris has used the term genius with respect to Bill, and rightly so. But I think the word applies to Chris also. I really do.
I agree.
Well, Bill, you know, and you've already said it, but, you know, there's a lot of shoulders you get to stand on. And without these people like Bruce and Tom and Freddie and Ronnie and everybody, there's no genius to it at that point. If you don't have those people around you, it's just not going to happen.
Yeah, and a perfect example of that, and I don't know what's going on, but I don't know whether you've listened to Bob and Tom lately, but Tom doesn't seem to be on anymore. It's just Bob doesn't seem to be on anymore. It's just Tom, and without that laugh, it just is not the same show.
No, it's not, but I have heard that Bob is just getting tired of it, and I think he's just wanting to back out a little bit. They apparently bought him off a little bit so that he'd still be a part of the show on occasion, but he gets more vacation time, and I think he's just kind of easing himself out.
Right, yeah. Well, I remember when I first heard them on the radio way back in the 70s or 80s or whenever it was, the 70s, I think. I said, what are these guys doing in Indianapolis? They belong in L.A. or New York or Chicago. These guys are too good. And what they did is they just turned themselves into L.A., New York, and Chicago, all out of Indianapolis. I think, 500 stations they're on?
I don't know the number, but it's remarkable. They've had a tremendous run.
Yep. And most longer than most people.
That's still a fact.
Strong here, even in the morning.
Well, they, of course, ran Howard Stern out of town.
Yeah.
Yep.
I never understood that one anyway.
Well, Howard is old after...
Well, this is the Bible Belt. This is Indianapolis. You're not going to get away with that stuff here. I mean, you can't...
Well, and Bill, the other thing is that Howard was old news. He was the second incarnation of that type of a show going on. Bob and Tom had it going on.
Right, that's true.
In the proper perspective.
Yeah, not quite as severe, so to speak.
Right, right.
And I think that that Howard Stern stole some of the bits from Bob and Tom.
Somebody in radio would steal something?
Yeah,
we do it all the time.
I don't think I ever had an original idea now that I think about it.
I remember Howard Stern accusing Bob and Tom of stealing from him, which was false. That never happened to my knowledge. They didn't need to. They didn't need to. They have enough talent on their own. They don't need to steal from Howard Stern or anybody else.
That's true.
Yeah, absolutely.
So that one sports guy that used to be on there, what's his name? I can't think of it.
Mark Patrick?
Yeah, he was a hell of a writer, too. He came up with some of those bits that were just unbelievable.
He is a gifted guy.
Oh, he is tremendously.
And Chris, tell where he got his start. Tell how his career began.
Well, it started off him calling in the radio station and he would call in doing Dick Nixon, and finally we got to the point where we just had to put him on. Never paid him a dime. He called every single day. You knew the guy was going to land somewhere. And I think isn't he a Muncie boy?
No, he is from Brownsburg. He went to school at Ball State, so he has the Muncie connection by reason of Ball State. But he hails from Brownsburg.
That's right.
And he is a proud father of Drew Storen, pitcher for the Washington Nationals.
Right.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Mark's special. He's just kind of disappeared.
Mark is
outstanding. One time I had an opportunity to meet him was when Dick Wolfsey had his show from Union Station.
Yeah.
And the show was on the third floor of Union Station. We had to go up an elevator to take animals.
Okay.
And we took a baby camel with us. And we loaded it on that elevator. And because of the excitement and everything, it pretty much decorated the elevator, the hallway to the studio. And Mark Patrick comes, that's when he was in his disco-looking days. And a lot of hair gel and flashy clothes, and he climbed on that elevator as we were leaving with that camel, and he says, "I've never ever been confronted with something like this." I think that's when Dick Wolsey says, "You're crazier than Jack Hanna." I says, "Oh no, But, yeah.
Yeah, oh, no.
It was fun. Speaking of fun, what a great show tonight, guys. Man, you don't know how much this means to Dr. Day and myself to have you join us for this time, your valuable time. And gosh, this
is incredible. I have a question for Chris. Chris, I always heard that you had a dog that you took into the studio with you.
I had an Afghan hound that I took everywhere with me. If I went to a appearance, I took him to a Pacer game. Actually got him in. But, yeah, I've always had dogs around me. But a funny story about the dogs, I'll quickly tell you. I had two Afghan hounds, and I was they were building out the new WNAP studio down at 2835 North Illinois, and the guys were working out of the basement. So Jim Hilliard and Mr. Fairbanks, the owner of Fairbanks, wanted me to go to lunch with them over at Stouffer's. And I said, sure. I asked John Gillis if he'd watch my dogs for me, and he said, sure. So we went and had lunch, and then on the way back, Jim Hilliard says, come on back, Mr. Fairbanks, I'll show you the new studio. And so they started to walk down the little hallway, and there in the middle of the hallway, my two dogs had defecated and trashed the whole front part of the studio. So Mr. Fairbanks took one look down the hall and turned around, and Jim and he started up the back stairs, and he looked at Jim and he said, kill him.
In fairness, Mr. Fairbanks was a cat man. There's a book about Mr. Fairbanks, and in the book, I wish I could credit the author, but I don't remember. Let me see if I can see it. I think I have it. It's a biography of Dick Fairbanks, and it tells a story. It is the book is written by Wendy Woodruff Ford. She tells a story about him writing to the publisher of the Miami Herald when he was staying at his Florida place. He was upset because his copy of the newspaper omitted the coupons that he liked to use to save money on cat food. So he takes his time and writes to the publisher of the paper.
Frugal.
Yeah, yeah. Grandson of the man for whom Fairbanks, Alaska is named.
That is
grandson
true.
And the portrait of Charles Warren Fairbanks, Vice President of the United States under William McKinley, I think, hung in the lobby of the radio station.
Wow.
Man.
Interesting legacy.
Oh, my Lord.
Yeah.
Well, you know, Dan Dockey will probably be in big trouble. He stated on the radio the other day how much he hated dogs.
Oh, that's a grave error.
There'll be
a protest soon.
He said if he played for Butler, that there is no way he'd pet that bulldog in the head. He'd act like he was going to kick it.
Oh.
I thought that's career suicide.
Oh, that was bad. Yeah, that's not a good idea.
My
no, well, he says a lot of shock stuff, though, a lot of stuff.
Yeah. But anyway, we have quality.
What's the name of that? That one bulldog passed away. The
Blue.
The mascot.
Blue, too.
Yeah.
I had the pleasure of meeting Blue when he made a visit to the State House one year. Yeah. Well, we talk about animals. Larry, your life is animals. So, mentioning a camel on the way to the Dick Wolfson show, I'll tell a quick State House story. One time, for whatever reason, down on the ground floor of the State House, when the legislature was in session, there was a little circus for the entertainment of kids. And we had an intern back then who was one of these fearless girls. She'd go say anything to anybody. And I made a suggestion to her. Next thing I know, she's down talking to whoever the trainer was. And before I know it, they're getting off the third floor elevator with a llama, and they took that live llama into the office of the Speaker of the House. This is when John Gregg was Speaker of the House. And
for
no particular reason, we managed to sneak a llama into his office to greet him.
That's cool. That is.
And I imagine his life was never the same. Yeah.
Yeah, that was fantastic. Gentlemen, gosh, we're about out of time. You do not realize how much I appreciate you coming on tonight. It's been a pure pleasure.
We thank you for hosting us.
Well,
my
Dr.
pleasure.
Dave, what a great show.
Well, that was very entertaining. And we need to have these boys back so we can get a little more in, because we did waste a little time with the news tonight.
Yeah.
Well, I for one will do it. What else have I got going on? I can't speak for Bill and Chris, but I'll be happy to return.
I'd be happy to come back. And again, guys, it's been a real pleasure. And anytime you get to get together with Bill and Bruce, there are so many stories. I mean, it's just been a great life as far as I'm concerned.
Oh,
yeah.
Well, it's been a great show. We want to tell everyone that next week on the program, brand new band, we're going to listen to some new music never heard before, except on Blog Talk Radio on Wild World Audiodacity. Have a great week, everybody. You've been listening to Wild World on Blog Talk Radio.
Thank you, gentlemen.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening this week to Larry Batson's Wild World. Be sure to join us again next week at 10 p.m. for more of the latest outdoor and wildlife news and information, along with great tales from your host, world-renowned wildlife expert, Mr. Larry Batson. Tune in again next week for another exciting edition of Larry Batson's Wild World. Larry Batson's Wild World is a Batson Wildlife Educational Services production in association with Blog Talk Radio.